Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have my brother, Taj Jackson.
Hello.
How are you, Taj?
Good.
I should share with the listeners. I've been reading a lot, okay? And actually, I'll spoil a bit. Our guest is an author, so I thought about reading. But anyway, we are live on The Power of Love. If you are listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in the show, we will open up questions, comments through Twitter. I got to change that. We should just start with people being able to tweet and comment, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to tweet us, go ahead and do so at DDJ Foundation. We are going to open up phone lines too, but I don't know if it's necessary because this is more of an informative show. Aren't they all though? But anyway, we have a guest, so maybe we won't be able to give you the feedback you want on your personal things. But if you do want to call us and comment on our topic, call us at 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. Now, the disclaimer, which my brother's not going to do, so I will have to do it.
Exactly.
We are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who've experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions and what we've learned to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Do not just rely on us. Taj, did I handle the intro pretty well?
Decent.
Yeah, I had a couple of mess ups, but I discussed everything we needed to, right?
So far.
Okay, Taj is hesitating on his answers because TJ over here has been fasting since Sunday. In my age, I've become a fan of fasting. I've been reading about it. I've been learning on it. So I'm actually on day 3, and I feel pretty good. I'm not hungry. I feel like my body's being cleansed. I have to drink more water, even though I've been drinking a lot of water. Mm-hmm. That's very important if you fast. Again, please don't just follow me because I don't want to get anyone sick or hurt, but do your own research. But that's what I am doing.
Do you feel that you go to the bathroom more often?
No.
So you're not going to have to leave during the show?
No. Okay. Yes. I won't have to leave, okay. But I do have been using the restroom more.
Okay.
Yes. I thought you meant the other reason why we go to the bathroom, but no. Anyway, I wanted to mention this because I came in with a salad, was about to take my first bite, and our guest mentioned, you know, day 3 is where the benefits really start to kick in for your body. So I wasn't hungry to begin with, so it was a hesitation on, you know, Francis wanted me to start eating something. So I came in with a salad, and I decided to pass on the salad. I'm going to keep the fast going. I found a great home for the salad across from me, which is my brother, which is why he's not really commenting. He's just enjoying it.
It's actually my last bite.
Yeah, it's actually gone. It's actually really good, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the mm-hmm, because the mouth is full. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Taj, I'm going to go right back to you with your mouth full.
Mm-hmm.
Anything going on in the week? What was the highlight of your week?
The highlight of my week, which I didn't do anything for on purpose, but it was my birthday on August 4th. And so thank you all for the comments and everything that you sent to me.
Can I ask how old you are now?
I think I'm 46. That's what it says. So
now here's my question. Be honest with me, Taj. When you say you think you're 46, is that like because you're in protest and you feel
no,
young?
No. It's actually because I haven't known my age.
I say that because I go through the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know my age, but then I see on the thing that people say I'm 46, so I'm going to go with that. And then I went back and it adds up, right?
Gotcha.
73, so 40.
That's very true. I've had to Google myself to see my age.
I've told people my wrong age before, mm-hmm. by accident, not mm-hmm. because I want to shave a year off or whatever.
Right.
It's just I never thought I hit 45, but I
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, happy late birthday.
Thank you. And so, what else was going on? Oh, I guess I should say, because I did get a lot of messages, that I think tomorrow will be our 3-year anniversary for Power of Love.
Show. On Taro's birthday.
Yeah. I think we started. That's what it's saying, that we started.
Wow. Really cool. I didn't know that. So whoever sent that message to Taj.
A couple people. So.
Well, thank you all. And with that said, I have to say.
You're welcome.
No.
Oh, okay. Huh?
I have to say thank you to all of our listeners and supporters. Because, you know, when we first started this show, we didn't know what we were getting into. We were confident, but at the same time, it's new territory. We've never been behind the mic in this manner. So to see how it's grown and to see our community grow and help each other and to, you know, even for ourselves, we've learned so much. It's been a wonderful 3 years.
It really has.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've grown as well. And not in terms of just my shyness and getting out of my shyness, but in terms of actually speaking about it, because I held everything in.
Speaking about your grief.
Yes. Gotcha. Speaking about my grief. I was the one that when my mom passed, it was. I didn't talk about it at all, and this show kind of forced me to.
Yeah.
And because I don't mind sharing if it's going to help people. And so
yeah.
It's just kind of weird to say, but that's what this show has done for me. And, you know, when we built this show, we built it to as a community to help others.
Yeah.
Not only in grief, but just in general, because it's so needed in today's society and atmosphere. And, you know, I'm very proud of what we have so far.
Well said, Taj. I echo those same sentiments. I don't think I was as shy as you, but it was still a new territory, new challenge. And, you know, me having to do all the heavy lifting, you just let that go. I thought you were going to say something or look or something, but...
I actually was swallowing part of my food still. You caught it at a good time.
No, but it's not easy, you know, speaking in front of... in this capacity, but it's been so joyful. Don't know if that's the right... wait, he's shaking his head, but won't try to fix it. It's been a great experience just sharing all we've learned with all of our guests coming on, explaining what they're up to, teaching us, you know, from doctors to authors to family members to people who've been wrongly in prison. It's just been an amazing, amazing ride. With that said, Taj, I think there's nothing great. I mean, I think your week was, with your birthday, was a highlight, but I think we have to mention our condolences and our love and support to those lost in the recent mass shootings.
Yeah.
It's just been out of control. You know, I remember talking to someone about how it was before the El Paso and Ohio one. Mm-hmm. And it was regarding it was a garlic festival. Yeah. I think it was a garlic festival. And just, I think that was like the third within the last couple of days. And then there was an Ohio one, I think at a Walmart in Tennessee. Yeah, it was in Memphis. And there was a couple that lost their life. And it just felt like, you know, we're really going in the wrong direction. And this was a conversation I had with someone. And then the news broke about the El Paso Walmart, where 20 people lost their life. And I believe 29 were injured. And then later on that day in Ohio, another shooting outdoors at a popular area where, you know, many more lost their lives and many more were injured. And I just hope, you know, we can figure something out. And I hope these lives that are lost aren't lost in vain. And I, you know, as everyone, it's just really tough to deal with over and over and over. Taj, have you ever considered like moving elsewhere?
No, in terms of. Like another country,
mm-hmm.
Way back when, you know, but
these
20 years
these
ago.
Kind of the direction doesn't
this country is going in
doesn't.
Well, you're asking the wrong. I mean, I'm a hermit, so okay. I stay at home anyway.
Yeah,
I'm not the person that goes out, but it's very dangerous in terms of like just the direction we're headed because it's almost become normalized, and when things become normalized, that's very scary. You know, and we can't let it become normalized.
But I'm worried that it is. You know, I'm worried that, you know, each time one happens, I feel like, you know, the sensitivity of our sensitivity levels goes down.
Yeah.
And I have too many kids to, you know, and I think I'm getting to the point in my life where I'm waking up early worrying about.
Well, they're going through the school system. And
yeah.
And that's the difference. Like
yeah.
my kid is 8 months old. So
yeah.
I'm not thinking about that yet. I'm thinking about my cousins and nephews and nieces, but I'm not thinking about.
Well, I'm not saying I'm so proud to be an American. I'm so proud of where I live. I'm proud of everything, but I'm just, it's starting to creep into my mind. If this can't get fixed and if it continues growing the way it is, I don't know. I don't think I could do it, but that's for
where
down
would
the
you
road.
Go?
Probably to Spain.
I knew that was going to be your answer.
I love Spain. I mean, I would still come half the year to visit and stuff, but I don't know. That's probably where I'd go. But enough about us and enough of where we may go. But we just wanted to make sure we send our love and prayers to the families that lives have been completely changed. And that's the one more thing I do want to say real quick. Although 20 lives are lost, you know, well, there's way more, but in terms, although lives are lost and then there's injured, there's so many family members around each person that are dealing with issues and grief and loss. And I don't think people realize how many it really impacts. So hopefully there will be a change and hopefully it will happen soon. That said, let's get on to our show. Mm-hmm. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
All right, cool. So today we have an awesome author. And I'm going to mess up the name, even though she just told me the name. I know. I'm still going to mess it up. But today, you know, I should give her, you know what? I'm just going to introduce her. We have with us Anita Gannan.
Awesome.
I did it right.
Totally got it.
Cool.
Wow. That's a first.
It is a first. I swear I've made it once people just know the name.
But you know what? I almost said Anita Gannan, but I remember you saying it was Gannan, so I went. But even when I just said it, I was going, Gannan, Gannan, which one am I going? And I was like, you know what? Do the one that doesn't feel normal. So I went with Gannan.
All right.
So that's right.
Though. It rhymes with fan.
Okay, cool. Now we definitely will get it. But so good to have you here.
Thank
on
you
The Power
so
of Love.
I'm stoked to be here. I've been looking forward to it all week. I apologize for my voice. I've been promoting this book like crazy.
Nice.
And teaching on top of it. So I've just been talking and talking, but I think we can get through it.
Cool.
So,
when you say teaching, because I've always wanted to be a teacher, mm-hmm. and are you a regular? Like,
no, I'm a private one-on-one instructor.
Oh, cool.
So I'll tutor the main thing that I do is teach piano. I'm classically trained in piano, obviously. And I studied at Susquehanna University and studied abroad in Vienna.
Cool.
So I teach little kids and have taught for over 20 years.
So cool.
So, who's your favorite composer then?
It's not a popular one
for
pianists, but I love Edvard Grieg.
Okay.
And he did like all of those. I don't know. He's he has a lot of imagery and most professional piano players out there will cringe at that, but I just love playing him. I think he's awesome.
Yeah. I love it.
Be honest, have you heard of that combo?
No.
Okay,
you have though. It's the Peer Gynt Suite, all the stuff at like Halloween time. That dun 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 dun.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah,
you totally heard.
Okay, yeah.
You just may not know it's from him.
But why would other piano enthusiasts cringe at that?
He's not the typical answer.
Yeah, and you know, like you should be playing Chopin or Beethoven, like stuff that's really, you know. But I just find his imagery, like, it's really like a story when you play him. I guess mm-hmm. everybody is if you play him correctly. But I just love the, like, fantasy sort of feel that he has. You feel like when you're dealing with trolls or the underworld, like, you really feel it. And it's fun. I like that sort of.
Yeah, that's cool. Because when you did that, that's exactly where my brain went to, was, like, imagery.
What, again, his name?
Edvard Grieg.
Do you know where he's from?
I should, but I don't. I want to say something like Norway or somewhere up there. I should know this and I forget.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I put you on the spot. All good. But we are here. So cool that you're classically trained in piano. That's something I never could get.
Well, I admire you guys. Like, that's like, because we don't get that improv and all the like stuff that you get with the other side of that sort of jazz training.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have had some of that. You get it if you go to like Juilliard.
Yeah.
But if you go to a regular kind of music school, then you have to pick a path. And classical was what I was doing for so many years. I was like, okay, I'll stick with this path. But in hindsight, I would have preferred more of the jazz route.
When did you start piano?
Five.
Okay.
It was age five, yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
I could talk to you endlessly about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can too. That's why I was stopping. I'm like, okay.
But we are not going to do that because we're not here for that. But anyways, again, thank you, Anita, for coming on. So you are an author.
I am.
And you have a book called Kibble, The Monarch Caterpillar Afraid to Get Wings.
Yes. I sort of designed this book to encapsulate all of the 20 years of teaching. What I realized was when I'm trying to teach a kid anything, even if it's music, and there are kind of two ways or thoughts. Some people like to simplify things way down, mm-hmm. and they'll just say like, oh, play this soft. But I find if you tell them the proper term right away, pianissimo, they may not know how to say it right away, or they may not, and then follow it up with that means really soft or really quiet. And then you just keep doing that. Eventually, they don't need that. It's really soft. They just, it's pianissimo, and they're just playing pianissimo, and they're talking the right terms. And I wanted to tackle a book on a subject that every child's going to have to learn anyway, which is the life cycle of monarch, or not monarch, but life cycle of butterflies and moths. And I thought, okay, what if we just give them all these really hard words like metamorphosis, pollination, chrysalis, right off the bat, and you have the book read to them. So it comes with a CD and a digital download. So they can literally just open the book. They have these words being said to them in really fun characters. I hired voiceover artists from, you know, SAG qualified. So it's a really fun book, but they're teaching all of the technical stuff you'd have to learn anyway, but in a really fun story.
That's great.
So they like,
so
you, they learn the stuff, but you're not really, it's not talking at you. And on
it's a children's book.
It's a children's book. Okay. And it's resonating with 5 to 8 year olds. So it's for young kids. I even had someone recently write a review and say that they had it on Amazon, and they said, oh, my 4-year-old loved it. So it's hitting with, you would think, because there's a lot of words in this book, but because it's set up like an episodic television show, I put it in like there's a narrator and then you go into the story itself. And I did that because growing up, I loved shows that did that, those half hour shows that like made you feel like a friend immediately, like the Dukes of Hazzard or something. Yeah. You know, it was like whatever, the show is the same show pretty much every week, but you tuned in every week because it was like, oh, they're gonna, oh, what are those Duke boys be up to now, you know? And it made you feel like, oh, I'm a part of this world. And then they would tell the story. And I thought about that with this too, just making it something where the kids are immediately friends, that there's, you know, this is a safe place. You know, come on with me. I got this awesome story to tell you. And I did it through the eyes of a blackbird. And he's really old and kind of wise. And he, you know, he's sort of this jazz guy. He's very cool. And he whistles. I got the number one world whistler champion to whistle for him.
Wow.
Yeah, I just emailed him. I was like, told him about the project. And he was like, sure, I'll do that for you. And yeah, his name's Hirt Chitro, who whistled for this, which is,
that's
it,
pretty
it
cool.
Sounds like a bird when you hear it. It's like, oh my gosh, so, this guy.
So can he do any kind of type of whistles?
He is crazy. He whistles with like philharmonics around the world.
Wow.
He'll be, and you would think it's an instrument, and it's, yeah, he travels around the world just doing this stuff. He's with Cirque du Soleil right now, and
wow,
he's incredible.
Tajan, I thought you were a good whistler.
I'm amateur compared to what.
They asked him to stop going into competitions and just be a judge because he was always winning every year. So now he judges them. Yeah. But
wow,
yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even know that existed.
I didn't either.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I love how you grabbed him for the project.
Right.
That's really
I was
cool.
Like, because I was like, I don't. The guy who's the voiceover artist for Larry the Blackbird is, his name's Eric Geller, and he's like, I cannot sing. Please do not make me sing on this, in this book, but I really wanted a little song in there. And so then I was thinking about it, and he's wrong, by the way. I heard him sing, and he's fine. But yeah, I was like, oh, I wonder if there's a whistler out there. And because my dad used to always walk around the house whistling, and I'm like, maybe I could get my dad. Aww. And then I just kind of Googled, and I heard this guy whistling. I was just like, oh my gosh, he'll probably never do it. And so I just emailed him and surprised he did it.
That's really cool. Yeah. Okay, so I have a couple of questions, because just last week, maybe the week before, I was talking with one of my daughters, and we were trying to understand, there was a butterfly, and I was trying to explain to her, and then I started having some doubts in my mind while I was explaining it, the life cycle of a butterfly. from what I remember, I don't know if this is just common knowledge or if it's wrong common knowledge, but the lifespan, is it 24 hours? Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't heard that, but there might be something out there. I'm not a super big expert. I'm learning every day as well. The life cycle itself, and I actually have this in the back of the book for more information, like fun facts, but it's basically four stages is how they...
Right. Caterpillar? Wait, there's a larva?
Yes. The first part is an egg.
Okay. Egg. I see it in the... It's very nicely. It's like a textbook, too.
It is.
But for kids.
Thank you.
This is really cool.
And some fun facts as well. And yeah, no, there's... So you can reiterate things after the story's done.
So an egg, stage two... It's called larva, but I guess that's our common knowledge is our common term for it is caterpillar.
You got it.
Number three is pupa.
Yeah, pupa.
Pupa.
And that's where metamorphosis happens. So inside their little cocoon, if you're a moth, and a chrysalis, if you're a butterfly.
Oh, I didn't even know butterflies and moths were similar. Taj, I know you didn't.
It looks similar. But...
And then an adult, which is the butterfly as we know it.
As it emerges.
And then there's the moth version?
Yeah, so, you know, there's both butterflies and moths. And some people are like, oh, we're all about the butterfly, but we hate moths. Which isn't because moths are a little more fuzzy and not as cute, probably. But both are super important. The butterflies are our pollinators. And the moths actually clean up a large part of just rotten food, feces from other animals. Like, they clean all that up at night. So they're really important.
So they're both very important.
Very important. Yeah.
Okay.
To our ecological system for sure.
And then the monarch caterpillar or butterfly, am I saying it's coming?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what kibble is about.
Yeah, kibble's about the monarch. And I made him a specific caterpillar because there's a real epidemic right now with monarchs.
Okay.
And they're declining at just a horrendous rate, to give you a perspective here. So I want to make sure I get this right. So the Circe Society counts the monarchs on the West Coast here every Thanksgiving Day. And so we haven't gotten our 2019 yet. But in 2018, they had more volunteers than ever, and they were able to count more sites than ever. And yet they had declined 86% from 2017. So to give you an idea, in 1980, there were about 4.5 million monarch butterflies. And now it's just shy of like 29,000.
Oh, my.
Which is really alarming and sad because it doesn't have to happen.
Mm.
And
what's causing that?
It's directly due to loss of habitat. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's happening. We had some wildfires here that wiped out a large portion of their habitat. Now, the tricky thing with monarchs is they are what's considered host specific, which means they only eat one type of plant, the caterpillars. Now, the butterflies will take nectar from many different types of flowers, but the caterpillars themselves only eat milkweed. And milkweed is, well, you can kind of tell from the title, it's not a very pretty, it's got weed right into it. And if you crack it, it's got this milky substance that kind of comes out of it. So a lot of people don't like it. They don't necessarily know what they're pulling up in their yard. I love it. I think it's a beautiful plant because I know the life force that it has behind it. But, you know, that's part of it, is just people get rid of it. Also, there's a lot of pesticides being sprayed and herbicidal plants where they're naturally sort of GMO processing these plants in to have the pesticides within them. So yeah, they're not spraying it. It's not, that spray is not ending up in our ocean now or lakes and stuff. That's a good thing, but it's still in the plant. So yes, they're killing the pests, but they're also killing these really vital insects like ladybugs and spiders and caterpillars that end up, a caterpillar ends up being, you know, our pollinator. So without pollinators, we pretty much are doomed. There's some plants that are self-pollinating, but one third of all of the food you eat is due to a pollinator. It's due to bees and butterflies and things like that.
Why don't you think this gets more attention or more of our concern?
I think it's starting to get some legs. Thank goodness. There are a lot of wonderful organizations out there that are really trying to make this become something that's common. Unfortunately, when you go to your local nursery or, you know, lumber, you know, place to purchase plants, mm-hmm. a lot of them are already treated with chemicals. You want to always make sure they're organic plants and, you know, they're non-GMO, they're pesticide free. So with this book, there's a portion of the proceeds that I dedicate just directly to That's seeds. Great. And I hand out seeds for free for anybody who wants them. If you want them, you can have them.
That's these.
And they're these. Yeah. I worked hand in hand with American Meadows. They're a very good company. They guarantee their seeds. It's only seeds. There's no filler in these packets. And it's a kind of our personal little recipe. We have four different types of milkweed in there, but we also have a bunch of other really great wildflowers that help all kinds of pollinators. And so that's kind of one thing to do, is just make sure you're getting pesticide-free, non-GMO seeds.
Okay. Now, I'm not a gardener. So I have this pack that you gave me, mm-hmm. which I love it because it's Kibble's wildflower mix to attract hummingbirds, butterflies, and other beneficial pollinators. Mm-hmm. I'm not a gardener, so I may, again, if I ask this question, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy.
No.
What do I do with this? I know I can get a pot, and then, right? Mm-hmm. Explain to me as if I had no idea what I'm doing.
Well, you're in luck because I've designed these to be very child-friendly. Like, any child can plant these and be okay.
Love it.
So you're good. The directions are on the back. You basically just kind of scatter them. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, you could literally plant them if you want to, but you just scatter them. Take a handful, scatter it.
Where?
Wherever you want them. You could put them in your backyard. You could put them in a pot, like you said, on your balcony.
You can just put them on concrete?
Yeah, you could. I shouldn't say this probably on air, but sometimes I just flower bomb like a really desolate, you know, sometimes I take hikes or whatever. And if there's a desolate area and it looks like it could use some wildflowers, I'll just throw a few out there and try to get them going, especially since the wildfire is here. Now, unfortunately, I know you have a lot of international listeners. The monarch caterpillar is mostly just North America. They're around in other countries as well, but not as prevalent as in North America. So they start in Mexico and they go up our coast, so West Coast and East Coast into Canada, and then come back for their migratory pattern.
That's amazing.
So the seeds probably won't really help much if it's international. I'm not even zoned to ship them international, so I can only ship them in the United States where I worked.
Thanks for sharing that. Okay, so yeah, I'm gonna try this.
Yeah, and you just scatter them and then you just press them with like your palm or your foot. It's just, I always think of it as, imagine it is a wildflower out in the wild and an animal just walks by and kind of stomps on it, and that's how it gets its roots and grows.
That's amazing.
And it needs some water, a lot of water in the beginning, and then it does need very much after.
So would you recommend maybe doing, I mean, obviously you could do it whenever, but is it safe to assume that planting them in the winter is better?
Yes and no. I think it depends on your area. That's part of the one thing that I'm asking people to do, because I hand these out, but then I don't really know how they worked. Like, I would love to see your gardens and what you've done with them. So I'm asking people to send their pictures in of what happened with their seed packet. And I think if you're in colder regions, yes, you can put them in before the frost in the winter. And then when the snow melts, it'll kind of naturally give them the water they need. But here in Southern California, you know, we can plant them any old time. It'll grow. So that's good.
And then we get anyone who purchases the book. Mm-hmm. Is that how it happens?
Anybody that purchases is the book. Thank you. And that just helps fund the seeds. You don't have to purchase a book to get the seeds. I take these to events, schools, community, you know, any kind of festival. If they have a booth, I'll just hand them out to people. My goal is really just to get these wildflowers back. I don't, you know,
that's so cool.
Helps me to with purchases, just because it, you know, that's how I can purchase them from American Meadows. But and I hand package these. I designed that and cut it with a little X-Acto
knife. You did a great job.
Because I don't even want to put that money toward like a company to make the packets. I'm like, I can do this and I'll just put the seeds. So I get more seeds if I hand do them.
You really handed this?
Yeah, I did. I cut it. I designed it. And then I just sit in front of the, you know, if I'm watching a movie or something, I'll just cut them out.
That's very impressive.
That is very
Thank you.
This looks very, very professional.
And they bloom in 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. One more question. Then I promise I want to get into the book. But one more question. here where we live in the valley. Do you live here as well?
I'm on the west side. I'm over.
So I don't know if you've experienced it, but well, he doesn't get out of his house, so I don't even know if he's experienced it. But for some reason this year when we're driving, we've noticed a lot of butterflies mm-hmm. on the road. And kind of just a crazy amount of butterflies flying through. I think they're butterflies.
Yeah, it probably is.
Okay,
yeah.
Have you not heard about that?
I have. There was, because a lot of people contacted me because they thought they were monarchs. They're like, look at this. And I even have one posted on the website. I have a video that her name's Dee, and she sent it to me. She's like, look at this. And she's so excited. But it wasn't a monarch. It was a different species. See, the thing with monarchs is because they eat that milkweed, they become poisonous to other mm-hmm. Animals or like birds or prey and stuff. So birds just learn not to eat monarch caterpillars. Mm. So these other butterflies, that's kind of their mechanism. Even though they're not eating milkweed, they kind of survive by looking like a monarch. So they might have orange and black wings really? And stuff. So yeah, there's like a little smaller whatever types, and I should know
so
them, but I don't right now. Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, this is how we survive.
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating.
But that's cool. I also think some of it, because I've seen a lot of coyotes recently. I do think it's a lot of the habitat's gone. Mm. You know, the fires really did a lot. Yeah. It did a number down here.
Well, I think we had two back-to-back mm-hmm. that really were huge, you know. And I think people don't realize, people think about, you know, homes loss, obviously a horrible thing and not something easy for anyone to go through, obviously. But we usually stop there as the part of the loss of a fire. Mm-hmm. But we always seem to ignore loss of habitat and what it does. So I'm happy you're bringing more light to it simply by doing this project, because it does. I mean, me, for example, I never thought about what, you know, insects and what animals mm-hmm. are being mm-hmm. displaced. But there's many out there that are because of these fires.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about what's WCM, which is the West Creek Media
yes.
Monarch Project?
So, yeah, that's kind of basically what this is okay. the seed. My goal ultimately, and we'll see if this happens, but my goal is to create a series of books where each book sort of benefits a certain need that we need in the in environmental sense. So for here, I'm like, okay, these monarchs are really dying at a very fast rate. Maybe I can help them with this book. And some people were like, it's just a butterfly, you know, why monarchs or whatever? But it's something that doesn't need to happen. First of all, this is directly due to us as humans. We're killing their habitat. Like, let's maybe stop doing that. Because everything on this earth really has a right to be here. And just because you can overpower something, doesn't mean that you should or you have the right. So I was like, and they're awesome. Like, I love seeing a little butterfly kind of float by. Everybody does. They're like, oh, butterfly. People will stop talking, be like, oh, look, yeah. a butterfly. Like, they're just wonderful. And then, of course, the pollinating that we talked about earlier, one in three bites for every, you know, food you eat is due to a pollinator. So why not keep them around, or we're going to be in trouble? And so the project, this Monarch West Creek Media or WCM Monarch Project, is basically to get people aware through education. I go to communities and schools, and really anybody will have me. And I just talk to them about the state of what's happening. And I'm also an ambassador for Heal the Bay. So I don't necessarily limit it always to monarchs, but, you know, I could talk about the water sources and plastic in our world. And really there's some simple choices you can make even today in your own world that have really huge impact. For one, this thing, this little a reusable water bottle is such a huge impact on the state of plastic, or a reusable grocery bag. You might not think that's that important, but you don't need to go grocery shopping or clothing shopping and carry around your little, you know, store name. Some people love that, but really, unless you're reusing that, if you go home and throw that out, it's just ending up in landfills or in the middle of our ocean, and you really do feel better. With Heal the Bay, they stopped plastic takeout in Santa Monica, which I'm super proud of. They have like more of a biodegradable takeout. So if you get food there, and they're trying to extend that over. And of course, you might notice here your straws are no longer plastic, which is great.
When you say here,
I heard, and I might be a little wrong on this, but a daily use of straws in the United States wrapped the world twice.
Wow.
One day, which was kind of like alarming when you think about that. That's it.
Yeah, my daughter gets on to us. Home, at restaurants, wherever we are, she sees a straw and she like looks at you like it makes you feel guilty for using it. So now whenever we go anywhere, she's always asking, you know, can I have a straw? But only if, I guess they have avocado. They have all these new type of straws that I guess are decomposable or recyclable.
I've seen restaurants use noodles.
Yeah. So she's all into that. So which is good to hear because she got it from somewhere. And I feel like maybe the school she's at, you know, did.
Which daughter?
Dee Dee. She's all in it. So
can I tell you, like, that's part, I mean, it's a little sneaky of me, but that's part of why I chose to have a children's book as opposed to just an environmental book. Because if you can get to the kids, man, they get on their parents.
Great.
They do, and they really believe they can make a difference. And they're just like,
know, it's to the point where I'm slowly phasing out of that and being conscious of it.
But it stays with them too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the future.
And it is their planet. Yeah.
So I think that was very, very smart of you to do it that way.
Sneaky, but No,
it's not sneaky.
I think the adults are like, yeah, whatever. But some like kids are like, yeah, we can do this.
It's
like,
all for a good cause. So it's a smart move. If it was not for a good cause, then it would be a sneaky move. Okay.
I have a question from Twitter.
Yes, go ahead.
A question for you. What did incite Anita? Sorry, I don't know why I can't
you
read
want,
today.
You want me?
No,
me
I don't. It was a salad, and now I'm like food coma. What did it incite Anita to get interested in butterflies?
You know, it kind of came at me a little sideways, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was writing something else, and I kind of got writer's block on it, and I went to bed that night thinking about, well, I wouldn't mind maybe just trying another project so that I can finish it. I don't know how you guys are, but I get a little antsy if I'm not finishing something. And I went to bed sort of thinking about, well, what could I write? And I thought, oh, a children's book would be kind of neat. And maybe I could do something that could help the environment. And then I thought, well, get a subject that every kid needs to learn anyway.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, and then I woke up in the middle of the night. And I always keep a little notepad by my nightstand and a pen in it. And I woke up a caterpillar afraid to get wings. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Then I was like, immediately in my head, I was like, oh, that's got to be done. That's so simple. Somebody probably has it. And then I kind of was going back to sleep. And then I sort of think, well, what if it hasn't? And what if you do it different? Like, you know, it's okay to have the same idea, but your story will be different than someone else's. So I'm like, okay, I'll write it down on this pad. Caterpillar afraid as goes. And I like roll over. And then I heard again, like, you're never going to read that in the morning. Like it was so chicken scratched. And then I was like, all right, I'll get up. And I got up then and I wrote it in that time frame. And by the time I finished it, I realized this could really be like a vehicle for the monarchs. I had kind of been aware of the monarch stuff happening. There's a couple organizations in Malibu where I live that do have monarch watches and things like that. So I just didn't realize how devastating it was until I started doing the research. And I was like, oh gosh, I have to make this something that at least can try to get fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The process of doing the kibble versus working with traditional publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, when I finished this book, and you'll know, there's so many words in this, but this is not a traditional children's book that you would see where you have a sentence, you turn the page, and another sentence, turn the page. And I knew a traditional publisher, it wouldn't even get read. I knew they were going to look at the number of words and be like, uh-uh, toss it. And then I thought, well, even if they do look at it, most like they're going to make me shrink the words. The logical step is, okay, take out the narration and just have the story. So I wrote a manuscript of that. Just, okay, let's just do the story. And it just lost its charm. Like it lost that little, the part where the kids feel like they're a part of it. And it's an okay story. And, you know, it worked, but I was like, ah. And then I started looking at, you know, I had gone through, when I first came out to LA, you know, I had done the acting and all of that. So you know the process of like, okay, you got to get an agent. You got to work to get the agent. And how do you, you know, there's this catch-22 that happens. The same thing is true for writing. You have to get a literary agent. That you have to write all these things before a publisher will even look at you. And I knew that it was just going to take years. Mm-hmm. And I also knew exactly what I wanted the book to look like. I wanted it to have that little back section of additional fun facts and mm-hmm. things that a kid can look at and just sort of remind themselves about the story. And I knew I wanted an audiobook. I knew I wanted it super colorful. When I was little, I kind of stopped reading for a little while because I was far enough along to go into chapter books. But, you know, chapter books have no pictures anymore. Right. And I just was like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. I love art. I think, you know, I love wandering through museums, and I think illustrators and painters, I think they're amazing, and they can. And I just was like, you know, what if there's a book where you don't have to give up the artwork? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, this is sort of why I chose to set up this book myself. Now, I could have gone through self-publishing, which it may kind of look like I am since I wrote it. But with self-publishing, you actually kind of go through a company and they sort of assign your ISBN number and they kind of have control over your book in their catalog. Some. And I didn't want that there again.
So you did this 100%.
Yeah. So I set up my own publishing company. I can publish other authors. And I started working with illustrators and, you know, an illustrator, John, on this and the voiceover artists and everything. And then I contacted printers and talked about paper and thickness and and then I took a course online on design. I designed the book. I designed how to lay out the book. So when you have what's called a spread, a two-page illustration, you've got a gutter, like the little back end of the book, and you've got to calculate how that goes together so that the spread matches up. Otherwise, it'll be off. Mm-hmm. And it was tricky. I mean, it took me a while, but it was also really fun. And I didn't have a deadline on myself. I was like, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this process. And every day I woke up, I think I got up around 5 and I'd start working by 6, kind of get my tea going mm-hmm. and think about stuff. And then by 6, I was just working nonstop. But all pulled together. There's so many little details that you don't think about when you look at a book, even just getting the ISBN. How do you do that? And the barcode, how do you do that? And I was like, truly a novice at this, did not know.
Well, and in today's time, you can look things up and really explore things. And I commend you for sharing that story because we have a lot of listeners, even ourselves, but listeners who are, you know, writers who mm-hmm. are artists and want to do something on their own, and to have you as a guest who did something on their own and came out with this project. This product is really cool to see, you know, and
it's totally inspirational. Possible. Yeah, it's possible. And I think the key is to not be hard on yourself. You're going to make mistakes. I made mistakes on this. There's a couple things I would have changed,
but don't say anything.
I won't say anything, but they're good mistakes. And I'm a firm believer in failure actually makes you a stronger and better
Absolutely.
Person. So like the next one would be so much easier. Because I have it all laid out now. I have the template. Everything is there. I just...
This is your first book you've ever published.
First book ever published.
And then you, as you said earlier, you see yourself publishing many more?
I would. I'd like it. To clarify it, I worked in the movie and television industry. I worked for Paramount Pictures and Sony Pictures. And I worked, you know, kind of executive assisting at Bramman Productions. So a book really, to me, at least the art side of it, not I guess the creative side of it really is a lot like a movie. It's just not moving. It's mm-hmm. kind of the same process. So for me, that part of it was relatively familiar and almost easy. I really loved that part. It was just kind of the back end stuff that was new. You know, what printer and even just the size of the book. You know, there are standard sizes that you can do any size, but there are certain sizes that work better for right. cost effectiveness. And there's a reason children's books are only 32 pages for the most part, because that's a signature and that is cut easier. It's less paper. So
how did you figure all those kind of
research? Yeah, okay. Just a ton. I was kind of, because of those, that history where you can't mess up when like a motion picture or a television, like they, you know, the budgets are really like, you just have to know what you're doing.
Your mind works that
Yeah.
way.
So I'm like, okay, how do I do this? And the nice thing about this is you don't have to release anything until it's all done. Like the very final stage is the printing. Yeah. So you do get to like double check and recheck all your like, okay, does this work? Does this, and then you can go print.
Well, I commend you, and anyone out there who's thinking about writing a book or doing something, please go ahead and do it. Whether it takes you a month, a year, t- 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, get it done, because this is something that will always live on, mm-hmm. and part of your legacy. So I think it's an amazing thing to do. With that, I wanted to mention this because I think this is really cool that you've done. You've managed to do something where it's a book about tackling fear. You know, we see, I don't know the story completely, but we see a butterfly go from vulnerability to achieving, getting his wings. But at the same time, which is inspirational, but at the same time, there's a benefit because it's a true story. I shouldn't say true story, but it's a story that has impact in our environment. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of accomplished two different things with one story, and I commend you for doing that.
Oh, thank you. And the fear part is in there too, but it's done, I think, which is really interesting, through friendship and kindness and through the community itself. It's not just like this thing is out there afraid and then like, oh, has to muster up the energy. No, he has this wonderful support group that comes to him, and especially the main mentor, Larry the Blackbird, really just takes him under his wing, so to speak, mm-hmm. and just tells him like all the good things about flying and having wings, and you're going to be great at this, and just supports. And through that, Kibble kind of opens up about his fears. And then, of course, there's other community. There's comic reliefs and things like that to make the story keep its, you know, you always have to have that secondary story going, and traditional television route, you know, it's not just the one story.
Yeah. I love her beaming when she's explaining. It's really cool. So a book, when you purchase the book, everyone gets a CD, mm-hmm. which is the audio, yes. which you were explaining, which is with SAG actors doing voiceovers. Mm-hmm. You went all out on that. And then there's also an audio download card.
Yes.
So you can download. So you
I didn't know. We're at this really weird stage right now. Yeah. Some people still have CDs. Some people don't. I would personally prefer not to do the CD just because, you know, they don't really biodegrade like a book would biodegrade. So I'm like, oh, I'm part of the problem here. Yeah. But I do think like grandparents and some parents have them in their car still. And it's like kids do like to just grab the CD and put it in. They don't necessarily want to download and wait and ask to borrow their parents' phone or something to listen to it. So I'm like, this is both.
It's really cool.
I don't think if it goes into a second printing, I'll probably just do the digital at that point.
Right.
Because I think we'll be far enough along. I know like computers don't even have CD or DVD.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't. Things on they don't anymore. Even have USB.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they're starting to phase those out. Okay, so I was going to say thank you for being on our show, but I wanted to tell you, we always give our guests, not always, but we try to always, I'd say 90% of the time, we give our guests about 30 seconds to a minute at the close of the show to talk about whatever it is you want. You could talk about your book. You could talk about environment. You could talk about your favorite book you've ever read. You could talk about a movie that's a must-see. Whatever you want to talk about. I should have prepared.
I know. I'm on the spot here.
Usually you warn them.
I do usually warn you before we start the show that I'm going to do this. But I'm putting on
the
spot.
Give her 15 seconds. I'm going to say some stuff on Twitter.
Cool.
Our anniversary is actually on the 10th. That was one thing. I said the 8th.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
One thing.
Thank you, Todd.
Mayflies are the ones that 24 hours. Butterfly.
Are those mayflies? Okay. I haven't heard of those.
Oh, I haven't either. This is what.
I love this. All right. Thank you. Who mentioned that?
Mayflies. I think
we have such
Serena
a great community.
That did.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want you to lose your place because you're on a roll, Taj Jackson.
It was great. So, yeah.
Okay. And?
Well, the other one's a question. So
no, let's ask a question real quick.
It's not a real quick answer.
Well, let's ask it. We could.
Okay. As a young student who is looking for career opportunities involving books, is there any advice that you would give her at getting into illustration? And getting a publisher. Well, obviously getting a publisher used.
Yeah, that's it's tricky because, first of all, draw a lot, all kinds of different styles. When I was looking for the illustrator of this book, it was kind of naive of me, I think. But I was like, I don't want it to look like Disney. I don't want it to look like, you know, the other things that are out there. And I wanted its original, which is kind of hard when you look at people's portfolios. They draw Disney because they want to work for Disney, so it's kind of like, okay, I ended up picking someone who they actually advise not doing, because you don't pick someone who's never done a children's book or never has done a book before. This guy was he's Canadian, and he's did a lot of newspaper. He's amazing artist, but he would do kind of those satire pieces that you would find, and I saw a clip in there that it was about Mad Cow and had this cow and it was holding one of those signs in front of the, I don't know what they're called, like for jail. And they had the numbers, the height behind them. Yeah. And it was, had this weird look. And I knew I wanted the characters to have emotion. And I was like, this guy can do it. This guy's going to do it. And I was like, he's never going to do it. So I had to do the whole like, write to him again. And I literally found him that way. He was on Elance, which is a free kind of, not, I don't know if it's free. I think it's free for you guys. I think for us, we have to pay. If you're hiring, you have to pay. But I think I would put your work on Elance. If you're interested in children's, specifically children's book, there's a society out here in Los Angeles. I don't know if they have more. I think there's one in New York as well. The Society, let me see if I can get this right. Society of Children's Books, Writers and Illustrators. So SCBWI.
And this is pretty much for anyone who's
anybody. You can just join it. I think it's like $70 or $75, something like that. And you get your own page, and you can put your work up there. And then people who are looking, I scrolled through that as well, and I'm a member as well. And I kind of, and they'll do events sometimes, like meet and greets, things like that. My brother, oldest brother, is an illustrator as well. He doesn't do cartoon like this, or I would have used him. He's more of a realist. Mm-hmm. But he has an agent. He just kind of kept hitting the pavement and found an agent, and that agent gets him most of his illustration work.
That's great.
So I would say that's
probably very helpful. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now the time is here. 30 seconds up to a minute of whatever you want to share.
Oh, let me start.
Whatever you want to share.
Well, and this is kind of sad because I can talk, but this kind of stuff, I'm always like, oh, I don't know what to say. I think probably if I was going to like sum up something that's okay, I'm reaching a lot of listeners. Mm-hmm. I kind of touched on this before, but I do think there's a real need right now for people to sort of start taking account in their own lives for the environment. I know a lot of people are in the same page. I still don't understand how this is a bipartisan thing. Mm-hmm. It seems like these are issues, and everybody needs clean air to breathe. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs fresh water to drink. The fact that this is becoming something of a bipartisan thing is really frustrating to someone like me, and I'm sure to many listeners out there. And so I really feel if you can, and it's hard at first, like I just switched over to, and I fail at this at times, but I'm really trying to not buy plastic. Now, some things have plastic computers and things like that, but when I go to the grocery store, if there is, say, produce that isn't wrapped in plastic, and maybe it's a little bit more, but it's just the head of lettuce without it, or I try to purchase those. I got myself some those produce bags that are kind of mesh. You can make them yourself if you want to. And you just, you know, you put it in there. And I buy a lot of bulk now. Just, you know, I used to buy the beans in the plastic bag. And it's like, oh, no, I'll buy the bulk. And then I don't have the plastic. It's really surprising how little you have to throw your garbage away when you start doing that. I can go, you know, especially if you can compost on top of it, have a little composting garden or something. I know everybody doesn't have that ability. They might be in apartments or things like that. But it really shrinks it. And I think, okay, when you realize like there's a garbage pile in the middle of the ocean the size of Texas, it's pretty yeah. You know, and that gets into the fish. And I was watching something where the plastic never breaks down. It's every single piece of plastic that's ever been out there is still out there. So if you can just kind of, I mean, big plastic's going to hate me. And I think they're important in other ways. I just don't think you need to put it on everything.
Well, I think that's well said. And your work speaks for that. And it's so good to have you here. So thank you for coming and sharing your story. To all our listeners, make sure you check out Kibble, the Monarch Caterpillar Afraid to Get Wings. How can they get this book?
The easiest is probably through my website, westcreekmedia.com. And there's a lot of resources there as well. But it's also on Amazon.com if you want to purchase it through there.
Cool.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I love your guys' show. I've been listening to it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We try to keep it light. But Anita, thank you so much for joining us. Wish you the best luck. I hope there's more books coming with a message. I think it's so important. And me and my family, I know that we'll be reading this book. Yeah. So
thank you
for coming, and thanks for sharing your story. Yeah. Taj, anything else before we close?
No, this was great.
Cool. As always, Taj, very elaborate and exhausting with his phrases. But thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week. Adios. Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.